Hour number three of Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Andy Bullbarch and Matt Douglas on an extended Monday version. Again, we're with you up until 6:37 this evening. Cleveland Indians baseball coming your way at 6:37. Pre-game coverage for about 25 minutes, and just after 7 o'clock, they'll deliver that first pitch at Fenway Park between the Tribe and the Boston Red Sox. But it's time now to get our weekly Hollywood fix. Al Harris is out this week, and he is being replaced. And if he's not careful, maybe he'll be permanently replaced. I'm just kidding. We love Al. We love having Al on the show. But Al is out this week, and we've got Michael Warschauer. He's kind enough to join us here and fill in as our Hollywood insider. Michael, thank you very much for joining us. How are you?
You're doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's dive in to this box office over the weekend. I mean, I think a lot of folks expected Dunkirk to do very well for a while, but they led the way at the box office again this weekend, Dunkirk pulling in just over $28 million. Were you surprised that really nobody else was able to put up a fight?
I wasn't too shocked. I think Dunkirk has had the advantage of some really good reviews and word of mouth over the last couple of weeks. It also has the advantage of playing on IMAX screens, which generally leads to a little bit higher number at the gate. But it looked like the Emoji movie really suffered from some bad word of mouth midway through the weekend and saw a drop off in its numbers going from Friday to Saturday. So it allowed Dunkirk to kind of come in there and really keep the success going and take the box office again this week.
Have you seen either one of those two movies? I've heard great things about Dunkirk. I've got mixed feelings about the Emoji movie. I'm not sure if that's one I want to go see, but it sounds like Dunkirk is a must-see.
It is. It is really fantastic, and it's certainly worth seeing on the big screen, really on the biggest and loudest screen you can find. That's really the way to see it. Emoji movie I personally have not seen. However, I did see that it is officially the worst-reviewed movie of the year so far, so it doesn't really have a good pedigree backing it up.
Insert sad frown face emoji here, right?
I mean, exactly, yeah.
Almost as if you built that segue right in there for me, man. That was, see, I don't know. Like, I saw that the previews for that, and I'm like, God, this just looks like a horrible idea. I get it. They're trying to capitalize on something that's become wildly popular, but I just don't see how that fits in a movie. But neither here nor there. Hey, were you surprised at all that Atomic Blonde didn't do better? I mean, it did pull in just over 18 mil, but are you surprised it didn't do better than that?
A little bit. I think you can't really go wrong with it. It's one of the directors from John Wick, which has done, that series has done tremendously well. And it's also Charlize Theron just kind of being awesome and beating people up. So what's not to enjoy? But it is kind of, it's an R-rated movie. It's a little bit more narrow audience than, say, Dunkirk, which is rated PG-13, or the Emoji movie, which is attracting, obviously, a lot of families. I was very surprised. I think it's kind of part of a trend that we're seeing in sort of the industry as a whole, where, you know, this movie cost about $30 million to make, and it's not really a tentpole, a big superhero, big action movie. So its numbers are disappointing for sure, but I think it's just getting a little bit harder for those smaller movies to succeed at quite the scale that they used to. It'll definitely still, at the very least, make its money back and probably end up being pretty profitable by the end of its run, but certainly a disappointing start to the run for sure.
Well, and that's what stood out to me. I mean, that's a very disappointing start, given all the hype that was surrounding this movie. Now, in weeks past, we've talked to Al about Baby Driver, and one of the things he mentioned about Baby Driver was that was one of those movies that they were really hoping would spread via word of mouth, because they didn't spend a whole lot of money publicizing it. You didn't see many promos and things like that. I didn't see many trailers, period. I think the first time I saw a trailer was when I went to a movie the week before, but this Atomic Blonde, I mean, they really pumped this thing up. That's why I was kind of shocked to see this thing start as slowly as it did.
Yeah, and they sort of followed a similar release strategy as Baby Driver, where the movie premiered at, I believe, South by Southwest and some smaller, really buzzy film festivals and large events. And it got pretty good buzz, but even that was fairly muted in comparison to to Baby Driver. So I have not seen the movie myself. I'm dying to as soon as I can. But I think that ultimately they just they pushed it really hard and they didn't get the audience they were looking for, which is a disappointment. And perhaps that speaks to the quality of the film and kind of the word of mouth that's coming with it. But certainly a disappointment for everybody. I'm not sure how they kind of fumbled this one.
Michael Warschauer is our Hollywood insider here on Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Unfortunately, we've got to talk about Sam Shepard. Sadly passed away at 73 years old. Pulitzer Prize-winning award winner. He wrote 44 plays, and he starred in many films. The Notebook, Black Hawk Down, two of the first ones that come to mind. I think a lot of folks maybe don't know how much work he did behind the scenes in order to be able to act and be a playwright. There's so much work that goes into that. What kind of an impact do you think he really had on the industry as a whole?
Oh, well, this guy, I think, is there's going to be a huge hole in not only the theater community, but the film and now television community as well. I mean, as you said, he wrote 44 plays. He won a Pulitzer Prize for Buried Child and wrote several other amazing plays, such as True West. And then his stage presence really just was his film presence was outstanding. Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven is a really fantastic debut, and I didn't even realize until hearing the news today that was actually his debut on film. He's so confident and carries himself in such a really incredible way in that film. And, of course, he was nominated for one of my favorite movies, The Right Stuff, for Best Supporting Actor in 1983, and had stayed really relevant really up until his passing. He was recently featured as the patriarch of the family on the show Bloodline on Netflix, which just wrapped up its run very recently, and it appeared in several films over the last couple of years, Mud, Midnight Special, The Assassination of Jesse James. So really just a prolific guy and one who had such a unique voice that will really be hard to imitate, and his absence will certainly be noted moving forward.
Well, moving forward here, we kind of transition into the Game of Thrones, and that really kind of seems to take over Sunday nights. I've got a lot of friends who won't even speak to me for a few hours on Sunday when Game of Thrones is on. Now, I've not gotten into it just yet. You know, Al told me a few weeks ago, don't just jump into season 7. You've got to start from the beginning.
No.
And he said, you've got to carve out a lot of time if you're going to get into this thing, because it really is pretty fascinating. Now, I've not seen it, but people have gone crazy about last night's episode of Game of Thrones. They're calling this 7th season the best one yet. Now, I kind of feel like there's no gray area. People either are too far-fetched with some of their expectations of this 7th season. Some people think it's the greatest ever. Some people think it's not as great. Where do you fall on this?
Well, I think that it's certainly been fantastic so far, and really not to get into any sort of spoiler territory, but one of the biggest advantages they've had this season is that now as they're moving away from the source material, from the books that it's all based on, they're getting a chance to kind of explore new territory and push the story at a faster pace. So things that previously had taken us, 7 or 6 seasons to get to, these reunions and characters meeting each other for the first time and alliances coming together, has really accelerated the plot and generated a lot more excitement and really just keeps pushing the ball down the field at a faster pace. I think ultimately we're going to judge this season on the way it ends. So I know there's a lot of people out there saying, you know, this is the best one so far. But if they bungle the ending and people are disappointed going into another long break before the final season, we're not going to remember these early episodes maybe necessarily as fondly. So I think it sort of depends on how it lands, but I'm certainly enjoying the ride so far.
Well, I guess that goes back to the old adage, it matters not how you start, but how you finish. And I think you're exactly right about that. That's certainly no truer in film than anywhere else, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
And I would say along those same lines, you mentioned that, you know, things are speeding up, you know, the plot begins to thicken, the stories are coming together. You don't want it to come together too quickly, though, because you certainly want to draw this thing out. And I guess that leads into my next question about the longevity. of Game of Thrones. I mean, seven seasons is a long time. It's a very long time, especially in a day and age where if you get signed for a second season, that's a remarkable accomplishment. But if I were to ask you that now, you know, what do you think about the longevity of Game of Thrones as far as a number of seasons produced? Where do you think that's headed?
You know, I think they have this final season after this. They're ending it after the eighth season, which will air sometime next year, if not a little bit later. But the big news is that they're working on spinoffs, that they're trying to come up with various stories that take place in the same world as Game of Thrones, but are completely outside of the story that they've been telling. And I think it's kind of a risky move. On one side, it makes sense that they're really going all in on this this franchise, which is wildly popular and makes a lot of money. But you also have to wonder if, again, maybe if people are disappointed in the end of the series, or maybe people are just fatigued and get tired of watching the same fantasy realm over and over again with different results. I'm not sure how long it's built to last. I think that we're sort of seeing the end of the peak of the really the success of the main show. I don't know how much longer they'll be able to carry that. I could be wrong. People could just keep begging for more, and they'll expand this universe and make many more seasons of spinoffs and have wild success. But I'm not sure how much longer they can necessarily sustain the really massive momentum that they have.
Michael Warschauer is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. He's our Hollywood insider today, filling in for Al Harris. South Park season 21. Hard to believe it's been around that long, but the premiere date was pushed back a few weeks. As a matter of fact, it was supposed to premiere a few weeks into August. They've now pushed that back into September. The premiere date is now September 13th. Trey Parker, Matt Stone, the creators of the show, they've said they're going to lay off the Donald Trump jokes. I don't know if I believe that, Michael. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I do know one thing, which is that these guys never mince words. If they say they're going to do something, they do it. So I do kind of hold them to that, and I kind of looked at what they were saying, and basically they kind of got to a point where they felt like the show was becoming like Saturday Night Live or even CNN, where they were just sort of reinterpreting events. And even for a show that is put together and aired so quickly, like South Park, that's exhausting and really hard to keep up with what has turned into a really full news cycle consistently. So I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of tackle issues surrounding Trump without necessarily going towards him directly. But I do think that they mean it when they say they're going to back off. And honestly, that really affects the show's legacy as a whole, that suddenly we're not going to remember them as the show that just kept making fun of Trump, but for everything else that they've done over a really long run. So we'll see, but I'm kind of holding them to their word on this.
Well, they pushed the envelope, not necessarily just on, you know, Trump or whoever the president might be at the time. I mean, I think they've certainly they've had their fun with a number of different administrations. There's no question about that.
They'll certainly find someone else to make mad this season,
Oh, without question. I love South Park. I don't get a chance to watch it as much as I used to, but 21 seasons. I mean, to be around that long, you've got to be doing something right. Love it or hate it, there's something to be said for the longevity of 21 seasons. Michael, we'll cut you loose on this, my friend. Friend, we always end it this way with Al Harris. We ask for your picks to click. What should we be watching for this week?
Well, this week there's a couple of really great TV shows and movies to check out. In theaters this weekend, the first big-name movie I would watch is Detroit. This is the return of director Kathryn Bigelow, who's most known for The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. It's a story set in 1967 during the riots in Detroit. It's gotten mixed reviews so far, but will certainly be a big heavy hitter here in the late summer movie season. Also coming out is The Dark Tower, the long-awaited adaptation of Stephen King novels with Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba. The studio's hoping this is the next big tentpole. It already has a much-loved and acclaimed source material, so hopefully the movie will follow through and deliver based off of that. On Netflix on Friday, we have the premiere of Wet Hot American Summer 10 Years Later. It's the sequel to the classic cult comedy as well as to the prequel series that Netflix made a couple of years ago, and expect almost the entire original cast to come back, including Amy Poehler, Paul Rudd, Elizabeth Banks, Michael Showalter, and so many more, except Bradley Cooper, who's in the original film and the original series. He's being replaced by Adam Scott from Parks and Recreation. And the last thing, if you're watching Game of Thrones, make sure you stay tuned afterwards to watch Insecure. I don't know if Alex talked about this on any of his appearances, but it's one of the funniest shows on TV right now with one of the most original voices in Issa Rae, and certainly worth checking out after Game of Thrones. It's certainly happier than Game of Thrones. It'll help you recover from that.
Very nice. It'll bring you up. It's a little bit lighter, a little bit looser, I'm sure. Michael,
absolutely.
Michael, we appreciate the time, man. That was a lot of fun. We certainly appreciate you spending some time and giving us some insight. And I don't know, maybe we'll have you on again next week. Depends on what Al has going on in his schedule. But we appreciate you filling in for Alan and giving us the inside scoop.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All righty. Time for a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. When we come back, we've got Your Money Now, Matt Douglas with the local news. Got about an hour left on this edition of Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL.
It's back this Thursday through Saturday, the annual Our Lady Queen of Peace Home Days Festival. Lots of food, games, and midway rides. Music, casino, and bingo every night. The top raffle prize is $10,000. Thursday is Protect and Serve Night, honoring law enforcement, fire, EMS, and armed forces. Friday is Family Night with entertainment for kids and discount ride wristbands. Come to the Home Days Festival Thursday through Saturday from 6 to 11 p.m. at Our Lady Queen of Peace, Erie Street in Grafton.
Hi, I'm Tom Hamilton, voice of the Cleveland Indians. Now the pitch. Swung on, hit high, hit deep to right center. Orlando back at the track, at the wall. Go into the bullpen. Swing and a little flare job to left center. It gets down a bit.